Hey everyone, thank you for joining us yet again for episode 58 with Jessica Santana, Why Tech Matters. Make sure to keep it locked. Hey everyone, your favorite girls are back. This is Ayana.
And this is Delilah.
And we're the non-corporate girls. Tuning in for episode 58.
Yes, we're very close to episode 60, and we want you to be aware of our social media channels where Miss Carla will be brushing up on our content and, you know, giving it a little spruce. So today we have a guest, and we're super excited to introduce her. So let's move forward with that. Jessica Santana, the co-founder of New York on Tech, is a name that is becoming all too familiar in the world of tech. With notoriety expanding from segments on Cheddar, a platform that informs you of the latest cool technologies and innovations changing the world, to receiving the Generation Orange Award from her alma mater, Syracuse University, which recognizes people who have made an impact on campus and in their communities. It is no surprise that the work Jessica is doing with New York on Tech is getting recognized. And even before it was, she has done the groundwork to make sure its foundation was built on longevity. Jessica calls herself an entrepreneur, technologist, writer, and philanthropist, but we see her as an ally, helping to bridge the gap between tech and those who are in underserved areas to gain access to opportunities and at the very least learn that they exist. We met Jessica doing what she does best, engaging a crowd in much-needed conversation on topics that are forcing us to move the needle and make the shift needed to include people of color in tech spaces where representation is still low in comparison to other groups. Today we get to introduce her to our audience and get you all inspired so you too can find ways to contribute in the tech space where Latinx are sure making a splash and working toward leaving our mark. So everyone, introducing Jessica to the show.
Yay!
Hey girl.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm really happy to be here.
We're glad to have you.
So excited to have you. So before we dive in, because we really want to share with our community everything that you do, we want to know, do you have a positive note for the week, and what is it?
Yes, positive note for the week. Honestly, it's been a very busy week, and yeah. I think in the midst of being busy, you can oftentimes forget about all the great things going on. And so I really haven't had time to process things that have happened over the last month. Yeah. A lot of really great things have happened. So my positive note, I guess, would be to take time to at least clap for yourself during the times where you feel like, you know, you're pressed for time and there are a lot of deadlines, because those are the things that matter in the grand scheme of things. Is when you feel good about the work that you're doing, even though you don't have time to process them. So that's my positive note.
That's
so
amazing.
How do you go back to, like, you know, kind of reassess and be like, you know, we have to celebrate this win, or kind of?
Yeah, Sundays. For me, I've incorporated these things called Jessica Appreciation Days.
Nice.
So that's like, those are always my Sundays where I go back to Brooklyn where my parents are still, you know, are still living. And I do like manis and pedis, and then I sit and I like write and read for a long period of time. Spend some time with my foundation. It really centers me and gets me back to, you know, where I'm from and what I'm actually fighting for with the work that we do. And then I think that's the extent of it, though, you know, just making sure that in your schedule you've been intentional about carving the time and then sticking to it.
Absolutely.
So important, because we forget all the time.
Yes.
I love that.
Appreciation. Right? I may have to copy that
mm-hmm.
a little bit. So to help people understand your career foundation, talk to us about your crossroads or shifts from accounting to technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so crazy, because when I was in high school, my mom and dad always thought that I'd either be a doctor or I'd be a lawyer. Because quite frankly, you know, my mom and dad migrated here from Puerto Rico in the 50s and 60s. And so their idea of like what a career possibility could be would either be going into medicine or into the legal profession. They had no idea about all the other kinds of things I could actually do.
Right.
And so naturally I was like, I don't like science. I don't want to do anything scientific. And so I'm not going to go into medicine. But I did have this law, this passion for the law. But as time progressed, I started, you know, especially later on in high school, I started getting exposed to other different things. And I really fell in love with accounting, and I had a lot of mentors in the field. I ended up doing this program called the Career Opportunities in the Accounting Profession, which was sponsored by the New York State Society of CPAs. Nice. And after I did that program in high school, I was like, all right, that's it. I chose my life calling. I'm going to go to college for it, and I'm going to major it. Yeah.
That's
and
dope,
I think
right?
a lot of it, I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, my love for crunching numbers, and then also, you know, having a lot of mentors in the field. Mm-hmm. But I also was spending a significant amount of time doing technology during that time. Mm-hmm. And I was using, like, my love for tech as a side project and a side hobby, as opposed to, like, thinking, oh, my God, I could actually make a career out of this. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, back in those days, MySpace and, like, Skonex, like, they were really, you know, important platforms for that generation, like, 2005, yeah, 2005, 2006, yeah. And
so many people don't even notice that they learned coding so young, because I created my own MySpace, and I understood HTML since then.
Yes.
But, like, you know, it wasn't fostered.
Yeah, it wasn't fostered. And so, you know, when I went to college, I majored in accounting, and then I really still loved the content. Like, I really liked, you know, the business behind it and things like that. But I was spending a significant amount of my time still doing side projects. And so a lot of my side hustles in college for me to make money was liaising with a lot of nonprofits in the area, redesigning their websites, charging a small fee for it. And things like that. And then when I studied abroad in Hong Kong in 2009, I was there for about 6 months. And that's when I was like, you know what? You spent too much time on the tech side of things. You just need to make the transition. So I ended up turning down an offer to join Deloitte's accounting practice. And I said, hey, I'm going to go to grad school for tech, and you still have a tech consulting practice. So rather than, like, making me a full-time offer, can we convert this into an internship into your tech practice? And they were like, sure. Because, you know, I had interned with them for the thing is, I had interned with them for so many summers at that point that I think it wouldn't have made sense for them to say no, because they've invested so many resources in me. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, sure, let's do it. And so I ended up going to grad school, getting my master's in technology. That was a whole, like, different shift in itself, because when you go from, you know, business to technology, a lot of times you think those things don't translate. And to be honest with you, most of the challenges for me while I was in that program were never on whether or not I could succeed technically, but were more about, like, can I actually succeed as a woman, you know, as a person of color, you know, in this space? Because I was the only Latina in my graduate program. I was one of the very few people who were U.S. citizens. And so a lot of the people in the graduate program were from other countries, mainly India. And I was just like, oh, my God, like, can I really, really do this?
Was your grad degree also from Syracuse?
It was also from Syracuse. And then ultimately I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I kicked butt, and I was able to, like, you know, graduate. And then I started my career with Deloitte, and then later on went into Accenture. And now I'm an entrepreneur. But I think if I've learned anything in terms of transition, is that a lot of times we are our own biggest enemies. And absolutely. I think I needed to get comfortable with being different in spaces that weren't used to people that looked like me being in them, and not necessarily using that as the reason not to succeed there. And it took me a while to get over that hump, but I can tell you that I was fine. I think the one thing that I wasn't fine about was, like, being uncomfortable about being the only person there. I always knew that in whatever trajectory I followed, like, doors of opportunities were going to open for more people that looked like me to sit at those tables.
Absolutely. So you was the one, like, first in line to, like, bring the rest along. And kind of when you are the only one, you kind of set the bar of how this should look going forward, because, you know, there's not a right or wrong at that point, because it hasn't been done as, you know. Also, a takeaway that I think is awesome for those that are listening is the whole point of you advocating for yourself in how you wanted to reposition yourself for that internship. Because other people would just be like, oh, they just wanted to give me this. If I don't align with that, then I got to go to the next thing. Yeah. And you found a space for yourself there, and I think that's pretty dope. Mm-hmm.
And your transition, did you have any tools or things that you would, like, teach yourself or learn yourself to help you fit more comfortably into the spaces that, you know, weren't really there for you at the moment?
You know, I honestly wish that I could say yes, but I feel like back then I was kind of just relying on my relationships with people to, like, have these kinds of conversations and, just saying, like, this is how I feel. What should I do? You know, LinkedIn was around and, like, you know, Google.com was obviously around. But I don't know that in those days, my natural instinct was to leverage technology to answer my questions. Mm-hmm. I think my, you know, instinct was, let me, like, go talk to somebody that I know that might be able to provide me some advice, or let me reach out to an alumni from, you know, back in 08 and 09, you know, that probably went through this already to have these questions answered. Mm-hmm. I think now I'm way more like, oh, I'll just go to Google. But right. back then, I didn't have any tools. The only thing I was really relying on was, like, my instinct and then, mm-hmm. you know, the relationships I had. But I will say that nowadays there are a lot more tools. There are a lot of places, you know, online that are publishing articles about the, you know, lack of representation for, mm-hmm. you know, people of color, for women, for people who identify with the LGBTQIA+ community. But that has now been curated because everyone knows that there's a need for it. But back then, I think everyone knew it was a need, but we didn't necessarily know how those problems were going to be solved. Because the platforms that I could remember that were uniquely designed for us back in those days were like blackplanet.com or like mihente.com.
Yep.
But those were like social networking right. sites. No right. one was like pumping out actionable, high quality, right. you know, content and advice. You know what I mean?
Yep, yeah. I totally get it.
It wasn't LinkedIn.
Yeah, it wasn't LinkedIn.
yeah. So your career trajectory has been really impressive, right? You've done technology consulting and all that stuff. When did you assess, like, you wanted to start your own not-for-profit? And when did you decide to make it a full-time thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so back in 2014, my co-founder and I, his name is Evan Robinson, we were always friends. So him and I were friends since, like, 2009. We ended up meeting at a leadership conference at a company called Ernst & Young. And when I saw him, I was like, hey, this dude looks like really familiar. Where do I know him from? And we just realized, like, oh, we both go to Syracuse University.
Got it.
And then we just got cool after that Syracuse. Conference. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
such a stan for Syracuse.
Yeah.
My sister's a graduate. Shout out to my sister Liza. She's class of 2012. Yeah.
I went to LeMoyne. So I was always at Syracuse.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so Syracuse was lit.
Syracuse is lit. I had so many moments in Syracuse.
Yeah. I mean, I was there back recently. I was like, I miss these days. Yeah.
Well, my friend was just there because she runs a program and she wants to take her students. She runs a college now program type of a thing. And she was like, memory lane. Actually, she's doing November 30th. If you're around, they're doing a reunion for Syracuse alumni.
Oh, that's cool. Yes, please send me the details. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, no, so him and I met at this conference, and then when we left the conference, we were like, hey, you know, what train are you taking? We both determined we were taking the A train. And so we got on the A train, we just started talking to each other, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, all right, I'll see you, you know, in a few months at school. He was like, oh, I'm getting off here as well. So him and I actually grew up about, like, 5 blocks away
Get
from
out,
each other
man,
in Brooklyn.
Cat.
Yes.
Y'all whole lives.
Our whole
never
life.
Never took the trains together. never went to the same bodega.
Never saw him. Like, and I was just like, this is so crazy. That's so I think crazy. Off the fact that we both grew up in East New York, mm-hmm. it was like, you know what? We should definitely keep in touch because it was very far and few between. Like, I only knew one other person that, like, was from East New York that went to Syracuse. Like, not a lot of people went. And so, you know, him and I caught, like, a natural affinity to each other. And then we followed very similar career paths. But he started out in finance and made the transition to tech. And I started in accounting and made the transition to tech. But ultimately, we both started our careers in the industry, and then we came back home and we're like, this is weird. Like, you know, I'm here, I'm making X amount of money, you know, not knowing that it was about 4 or 5 times our parents' household incomes. And then, you know, putting into perspective that, like, back in 2014, there were a lot of reports talking about, like, the lack of talent within New York City that were going to be able to fill the number of jobs that were here. You know, I think him and I were naturally moved to say, well, I don't know that there's no talent. I actually think that you guys are overlooking the places that talent can come from. Mm-hmm. And so that
Speak
was...
Speak on it, right?
Say that again.
Yeah. And so we were like, let's start an organization. We were just like, let's start an organization. It started in Starbucks on napkins.
But did you know it was going to be not-for-profit?
We knew it was going to be non-profit, yeah, for sure. But the intention back in the day, well, we were not trying to take it full-time. Like, it wasn't something we were trying to start as a business. It really came out of a place of wanting to serve and wanting to help and being able to prove the point that, no, like, if you give people the right skills and tools and resources and opportunities, just like you did with us, then they could excel.
Right,
and so, this is a long-winded way of saying 2014, we ended up recruiting 20 kids. We ended up getting placed in an article on BET.com, and then that article, you know, went, I don't want to say it went viral, but it was shared widely.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, there was an accelerated program that funds education entrepreneurs. And so from September 2015 to March 2015, we're running it as a passion project. And then March 2015 came around, and this organization is like, hey, you know, apply to this program, we'll give you $50,000 if you get in, and that will be like your seed point, your seed funding, and let's see where you can take it. And so at the time I was at Accenture, and I was like, I need to try. Like, I'm going to leave because I need to at least try to see where I can take this. And that was like validation that the work that we were doing was important. And to have people there saying, I actually want to invest in you, not in my time, but like in my dollars. I think that shifted the way we started thinking about the way you actually solve problems for communities that look like ours. You know, it's through building viable businesses. And so for me, I was like, I'm leaving. And my co-founder followed me a few months later. And we've been full-time on the project for more than 3 years now. We're going into our fifth school year now. Well, we're in our fifth school year now. So it's been a crazy 4 years. But the intent was never to build a business around what we were doing until someone said, like, build this.
Isn't that how the best things happen?
Yeah, we have a similar story. Like, right?
Well, yeah.
We didn't see this to be the same. So I think that when you start from a passion and a really just want to solve, everything else kind of falls in place rather than doing it the other way around when you're trying to do it to make a coin or to, like, then it feels like you're trying to put things in piece, like put a puzzle piece that doesn't fit.
That's crazy. So New York On Tech is a trailblazing platform to provide opportunities for young people in technology, which is no small agenda, right? How do you get children interested in a field that's not always at the forefront of them choosing a career?
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think that yes, there are students that don't know that this space exists, and we need to provide the appropriate resources for them to provide the necessary exposure. But in our work, we actually realized that there are pockets of students that are already trying to figure this out on their own. So a lot of the students that come into our program, they know that tech exists, they know that coding exists, they know that there's a space for them here, but they just don't have that next step. And so the way that we approach it is if we think, okay, there are really four things that happen within my trajectory, within Evan's trajectory, and then within the trajectories of a lot of our peers that came from communities like ours and are now succeeding in the industry that needed to be true in order for them to get there. And those four things for us were access to the technical skills, so the development portion, access to the mentoring relationships, access to the networks, and then access to the professional experiences. And so we designed our programs around not only exposing students to the industry, but going as far as saying, hey, we're going to incubate your talents for the course of 10 weeks or 9 months. And not only will you gain these skills, you will also be able to go ahead and, you know, get an internship at a major corporation before you even go to college. And so I think for us, it was understanding that it was going to be more than just an exposure program to move the needle for the students. And I think the second piece is understanding that framing is going to be extremely important. Because for a lot of students, they're like, you know, I want to code, and they don't have, like, the whys behind it. And so we say, you can code, and you can apply it to all of your external passions. Like, if you are a hairstylist, right, you can learn how to develop a website, and you can have people book you online. And if you don't want to, you know, develop a website to have people book you online, at least here are the tools that you can actually leverage to alleviate the services you're actually trying to provide. And so for us, I think it's making sure that we are deeply intentional with the students in our programs, and then also saying this is how it's important and relevant to you. Because culturally, you know, the tech industry hasn't been seen as like a sexy industry or field,
right.
Especially when we're talking about computer engineering and, you know, software and things like that. But there's so many other things that students can do within this industry. They just don't necessarily know how the skills they learn, you know, actually can be applied to their specific passions.
Right.
So
they're
I think
transferable.
Yeah, and they're very transferable. And so for us, another thing I'll say is meeting students where they are. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times, you know, we place these unrealistic expectations of young people thinking that the goal is just let's teach you these skills when they are coming from single parent homes where their moms are working 9 to 5 or their fathers are working 9 to 5 or sometimes one of those people or all of those people are absent from their lives.
Right.
Like, it's really about meeting students where they are and then being able to help fill the gaps for them because, you know, right now the way that our educational system is set up, we're not setting them up truly to succeed in the ways that they can.
Right.
And
because even before people care about a work, they care about how they're going to get their next meal.
Absolutely.
So if they can sustain that, they're not going to focus on their future. And
absolutely.
Just, like, in sense of that part.
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, it's about intentionality, it's about framing, and it's about representation by being able to, like, say, hey, these are the people that look like you that actually are in this industry. And if they can do it, you can too.
Right. How soon do you engage with, the students you work with? Like, how soon in the...
In the trajectory? Yeah.
Right.
So right now, we work with students who are sophomores in high school, and as soon as they hit their sophomore year, they can complete up to 3 years of coursework with New York On Tech. They start in a 10-week web development course, then they can move into our 6-week UX design course, and then ultimately go into our 9-month course that focuses on web and mobile. And then finally, they'll go into internships after they complete one or two of those programs that we feel comfortable enough to put them into, you know, paid internships because their skills are proving out to be, you know, things that they could actually add value to the industry.
Absolutely.
And so we start with them, you know, their sophomore year in high school. We found that that's the sweet spot for the level of maturity that we do need in the program since we are putting them into corporations. But that's not to say that we won't ever go younger or go higher. It's just where we decided to start for the sake of age and obviously legal reasons as well.
Right.
Since we're trying to provide those work-based opportunities. But the cool thing about our program is that we don't stop with them in high school. We have a robust alumni program now.
Nice.
Our students have entered places like Dartmouth College and MIT. Some of them have stayed local here in the CUNY system, in the SUNY system. And so for us, it's even continuing to provide services at the collegiate level because it's one thing to get them there. It's another thing to get them through.
Absolutely.
That's like, and it's such a thorough program that's like really exciting.
So this is added or implemented along with this, their coursework at the schools they're in. So this is like extra.
This is actually extra. And so the cool thing about our program is that we convert corporations into classrooms. And so it's not so much that we go into the schools, but we work with the schools to identify students who might benefit from a program like ours.
Mm-hmm.
And then those students, after school or on the weekends, they report to our corporate headquarters and whatever site they're assigned to. So if they're assigned to Google, they're going there once or twice a week, depending on the program. And they're learning from the engineers and the employees of those organizations who we've trained on our training and our curriculum.
That's interesting. Are they applying for this program or? So you need to apply and get accepted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you want to tell people how to do so? So like anybody listening interested could recommend to?
Yeah, for sure. So New York On Tech, it works with specific schools in the city. You have to come from a school that is high poverty. So for us, that means 50% or more of the population being eligible for free or reduced lunch. And all of our programs, we open up admissions three times a year. Once in the summertime, once in the fall time, and then once in the springtime for all of our different courses.
Great.
And if you are interested in applying, I would just say I would encourage everyone to continue to look at the website, newyorkontech.org, and see and sign up for our email newsletter that basically distributes to everyone when the application is open. Another, you know, thing I'll say about the application process is that there's no GPA requirement.
Yeah.
There's no, we don't want to work with just, you know, stellar students because at that point we wouldn't be actually moving the needle, you know. Mm-hmm. I encourage everyone that even if you think, you know, your GPA is not high enough and you have a 65 or a 70 or you have are failing in school, this is still a program for you. So you'll notice that the students in our program, some of them do have really high grades and then some of them have really low grades. But when you put both of those kids in a classroom, mm-hmm. with content they actually care about, they succeed in the same
Absolutely.
Way.
That's amazing.
And that goes back to meeting them where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's amazing. So we all know diversity and inclusion is a hot topic these days, right? Mm-hmm. What is one thing you would advise businesses to do if it were up to you?
Mm-hmm. Hire. That's honestly the only thing I
one
can
word.
Say. I mean, I get, like, at this point in the game, and this is not to sound like we can't do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in the game, there's been so much research. There's been so much money poured right. into diversity and inclusion initiatives. There have been so many technology platforms now focusing mm-hmm. on removing biases from the hiring process mm-hmm. that at some point, you need to look at your business and you need to look at the processes that you have in place that don't get people to the next level
right.
and be okay with saying, hey, I'm actually a part of the problem. And once you identify that you are part of the problem, then the next thing you need to do is hire, because there's no other pieces of advice that I can say now that right. other people haven't already said.
Absolutely.
That's real.
Yeah, just hire. Like, listen to Jessica, guys.
We want jobs.
Yeah.
People are qualified.
And why do you think that the hiring is not happening?
That's a good question. There's so many reasons I think the hiring is not happening. I think that managers haven't been trained to look at candidates with a different set of eyes. I think, like, it takes one person to be like, oh, you know, this person was a manager here working on X, what are the actual skills that are transferable from this role so I can put them in this role? So I think there's a lack of training for managers to think about how to translate one skills from X to, you know, Y and then to Z.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's true bias in the hiring process. Like, if I'm showing up, you know, as a woman of color or as someone who has, you know, curly hair one day and you don't like that hair and it doesn't resonate with you, I think that's also part of the process, because right. we can't act like racism and discrimination doesn't mm-hmm. exist.
Right.
I think part of the problem is a general apathy for it, right? Like, we can't, even though diversity and inclusion is important to me and it's important to many of the people that I know,
right.
we can't always assume that it's a priority for the people at companies and organizations. I always say that until diversity and inclusion is actually tacked to managerial expectations mm-hmm. and tacked to people's money, it's never going to be a priority. Like, if you are not financially responsible for making this happen, and if your performance review does not keep you accountable to it, there's no incentive for you to want to do it.
Absolutely.
And so I think that it's many things, but those are some of the things that come into my mind first. But it's a lot of things that don't allow people, you know, to actually thrive and obtain jobs in this industry. And a lot of it is not people, you know, it's mm-hmm. not it's not candidate
oh,
driven.
No.
A lot
no,
of it is like
business.
Is
the business side.
Yeah. Well, speaking of businesses, you are a co-founder. Can you tell us some pros and cons of what it's like working with a co-founder?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I'm trying to think. I get this question a lot. And it's so crazy because I feel like Evan and I, because we were friends before this,
mm-hmm.
our relationship doesn't feel transactional. And I think because there was respect for each other before mm-hmm. starting New York on Tech, that relationship and that trust and that respect has always carried out in the process. Do we have, like, arguments sometimes? Sure. But the arguments are more about, like, whether we're going to host an event on a Wednesday or a Thursday.
That's not too bad of a problem to
it's
have.
It's never
serious.
Yeah, it's never deep, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think working with him has been really fantastic. I also will say that him and I have complementary skills, where I might be really good at like spokesmanship and like strategy and operations, and he's really good at like correlating people and getting them excited and building relationships with partners. And so those two skill sets, when you combine them together, make for a really good, you know, team. And I'll also say that him and I, like, I think we just put the friendship first, and we actually spend time with each other outside of the work that we do. And I think
chilling together.
Yeah, that's like, and that's together. Important. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And you know, he knows my family, I know his family, and so there's just like a lot of love and a lot of trust there. And I think that's what, you know, has kept it going. But we certainly argue. But I can honestly say that the arguments are never deep. And I will also say that till this day, I feel like Evan, if I were to like pass away tomorrow, right? God forbid. If I were to pass away tomorrow, though, I trust that he can live on and pass on the legacy to New York on Tech even without me here. And I always said if there was ever a moment where I had to question that, then we weren't in the right space and we were misaligned. But till today, I still feel like I trust him that if I were to ever need to make an exit, you know, by circumstance or, you know, by the, you know, the divine, you know, forces of the world, that he would be able to do this without me.
Mm-hmm.
That is
so beautiful.
That is amazing. Oh, thank you. And it's just like, do you ever have like moments of reflection where you're like, oh my God, like the work that I'm doing right now, like, I really love the work that I'm doing. I'm so happy I could be doing what I love and doing it with somebody that's dope.
Yeah.
Like, how does that, like, kind of, you think of that in retrospect?
Yeah. No, I mean, every day I feel like, I feel very blessed because, I never thought that we would be doing this, like, as an actual business.
Right.
And I know that for me, like, thinking about where I'm from and, like, where people end up and then seeing where I've ended up has made me truly grateful. And it makes it seem like all the issues that I do have in life are, like, really first world problems.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then even, like, working with the students in the program and then hearing back feedback from our program managers about certain, like, student issues and family issues that students are experiencing, that always gets you back to the purpose of your why and the why you get to do what you do. You know, there are obviously certain aspects of the role of being like a co-founder that I don't like. For like, no, I don't want to look at books, and no, I don't want to focus on financials, and no, I don't want, like, you know, to submit reports, right? Like, that's not something that I enjoy doing. But those things are like, you know, they're things that I'm just like, I could be doing other things that, you know, could be a lot worse than this. And ultimately, these reports lead us to be able to report data on, you know, whether or not our programs are working. And so it's not like, you know, I'm ever, like, super ungrateful for the moments where I have to do things that I don't necessarily like to do.
And you're doing it to sustain business that's yours.
Yes.
Not for somebody else's books and stuff. So
it's
that's
a different feeling.
It's a different feeling. Like, well, I'm going to hack this.
Yes.
So as a young woman, Latina, and entrepreneur, which do you find plays the most integral role in the business decisions you make?
Repeat that question one more time.
Yes.
Okay.
As a young woman, Latina, and entrepreneur, which do you find plays the most integral role in the business decisions that you make?
That's a good question, right?
That's a good question.
Isn't it? Because I was like, we have a lot that we have to move forward with in how we choose things. What hat am I going to wear today? And, like, who will have to, like, benefit in this decision? So even for any entrepreneur, I just think it's not a question that has an end or be all. Mm-hmm. But it's just, like, how do you wear that hat on any given day?
Yeah.
Well, so to be honest with you, I feel like, you know, when I was in college, I spent a significant amount of time, like, kind of not comfortable with who I was as a woman, as a Latina, like, as a person of color, because I was in a predominantly white institution that weren't used to people like me, you know? Mm-hmm. I was, like, I don't know, like, I felt, like, this sense of imposter syndrome, but I also felt this sense of, like, gratitude as well, like, oh my God, I get to represent my people, you know what I mean? But then, you know, having that chip on your shoulder is very exhausting, and I think the one thing that's very beautiful about who we are and what we represent is that, you know, we can actually say, like, we're a resilient people. You mm-hmm. know, when you think about the plight of Blacks and Latinos in our country, like, we've really have endured a lot of things, and a lot of us are still standing. Mm-hmm. But with resiliency also comes exhaustion, mm-hmm. right? Having to always be resilient is tiring. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to always have to, like, defend, you know, my right to be in the spaces that I find myself in. And so for me, I don't know that one hat takes over the other, or that, you know, one hat becomes more important in other situations. I kind of just have taken the approach now where I'm going to just show up who as I am. And then if you don't like it, then you are not my tribe. And if you do like it, then let's vibe out. You know, I think I've gotten away from the phase, especially now that I'm, like, getting a little bit older. Like, I'm going to be 30 in January. So for me, it's like I'm getting a little bit older, and I'm just like, if I spent such amount of time thinking about, like, how I could be versus embracing who I am and what I am, then what I'm really doing is taking away energy that I can be putting in places that actually help me become a better me. Mm-hmm. And you know, giving people, like, kind of permission to disrespect me and what I represent. You know what I mean? Or make me feel like I don't belong because I don't necessarily fit the mold. I kind of am at a place in my life where it's like, I create the mold. And if you're going to be with me, cool. If you don't want to be with me, that's cool too, you know? Mm-hmm. But knowing my limits in terms of what I'm going to accept and what I'm not going to accept is kind of where I am right now. And if I could give advice to anybody who's kind of trying to find their voice, you know, at work or in their businesses or in their networks, it's just like, do it for you, because you don't have the privilege, like, to sit here and try and always figure out how to be a people pleaser. And ultimately, once you accept that you are going to authentically be who you are going to have, you're going to have no choice but to receive the tribe, you know, that will come to you as a result of feeling how authentic you are.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was
so beautiful.
And everything that I think that we stand for.
Yes. Okay, so what would $100,000 in funding do for New York on Tech, and how will you allocate it among different areas of your organization?
Yes, thanks for asking that. For me, if I had $100,000 right now, we would pour it into alumni services. Okay. You know, when we started, we weren't thinking about alumni program because we weren't even thinking about a business. And I think as time has passed, we have this increasingly amazing, talented group of students who are in college, and right now our high school programs are very well funded, but because we've only been around for 4 years, this is the first year where we're starting to feel the magnitude of our alumni, like, to the point where, you know, they're calling us for recommendations, they need help, they're coming into the office, they need space, they need a laptop, they need funding. And so if I had 100K, I would literally dedicate it to the alumni program, for us to be able to, you know, do more than what we currently can with that. And we do things. We do these biannual summits with them. So we're hosting one in January. We're hosting one in June. We continue internship placement with them. But it'd be great to have, like, a pool of money that we can tap into to help solve very specific issues that each of them come to us with, you know, come to us to the table with. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, putting it out in the universe and hoping that funding comes through. Anybody that's listening, you reach out to Jessica.
Yes.
100K. Because you got somewhere to put that money.
So this brings us into our hashtag obsessed with portion. Is there anyone that you're hashtag obsessed with?
Ooh, I'm obsessed with so many things. You know, recently, I feel like I'm hashtag obsessed with Yvonne Orji.
Yeah.
From Insecure. I really love her.
I was just looking at her Instagram page because remember she was speaking about, like, not being in a relationship, and now she's like in this
relationship. I'm so happy. Oh my gosh.
I'm just so
happy for her. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm obsessed with Yvonne. I think she's just great, and I think she also, like, I don't know. I feel like she's just putting on for us, like, out there in the world. Yeah. And so I would want to give her a shout out. So, girl, if you're listening to this, hey.
That's dope. Nobody has mentioned that. She deserves the credit. But that's dope.
Yeah. And she's, like, a new name, too. You know, I feel like a lot of times people would be like, oh, like, you know, I want, you know, Oprah. And obviously, like, I'm obsessed with Oprah, too. Right. But, like, I feel like, you know, we need a new generation of voices.
We need to share these flowers with other people. Like, Oprah's, she don't have nowhere else to put these flowers at.
Yeah, right, Oprah has a lot of flowers, a lot of land.
A lot of everything. Like,
Spread out
the garden.
She's going to be fine without my shout out.
But that's why hashtag obsessed with is so important to us, because we have people that tell us are an array of different types of people, and we want everyone out there to, like, get to know them.
Get to know them and see what other, there's so many people doing so many dope things, and I want to know, like, about. I want to hug them all. I want them all to be my friends. And I, like, because I get hype off of people that are doing, like, dope things.
Yeah.
I just feel like everybody should know about that.
Me too. Yeah. And I'm also obsessed with two more people. I'm obsessed with Kendrick Samson, who is also on Insecure. He was Issa Rae's new love interest.
Nathan.
Yes.
Oh, Lighthouse.
You know, yes, how he just went ghost. But in real life, like, he's been doing a lot of
his
work.
His platform is really
intense.
Yes.
And I, like, really been enjoying, like, following his trajectory, not only because he's obviously, like, fine.
Yeah.
but because he talks about in things that are important that I think people, you know, are not comfortable talking about, race and social justice.
His political play is like, he makes it cool.
Yeah, he makes it really cool.
Jesse Williams' cousin.
Yes.
Is he really?
No, he loves
it.
They kind of have the same.
You're right.
That's funny.
They cousins.
Yes. And finally, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Oh, she's great.
She's amazing.
I can't believe she's only as old as she is. She's like 26-ish or something
I think she's like 28, 29. And, like, regardless of her age, right? Like, she really came through and, like, two-piece people. Like, you didn't know who I was. I was at a bar. And, like, now I'm here. And, like, I'm really not going anywhere.
She has such a grounded stance. She's amazing. I was telling Ayana about her. Co-signing Ayana.
Ayana Presley.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're just doing amazing things. It makes you proud.
Yes.
I just feel like when I mention her age, it's not because age matters, but it's just like people doing the damn thing at such a young age where, like, I feel like not everybody is willing to take that type of responsibility on.
For sure.
She's dope for that.
Yeah, me too.
I'm here for all those obsessed with.
Yes.
So now we're going to get into our little game.
Okay.
It's called If I... dot, dot, dot.
Okay.
Can I give you the
word? Yeah, let's do it. So if I were a fruit, I would be a blank.
Wow. I mean, if I were a fruit, I would be a canepa.
A canepa? Yeah, I love canepa.
I haven't had one forever.
If I were an actress, I would do blank kind of movies.
I would do dramas.
Drama?
Yeah.
I live for the dramatics and the theatrics.
I would do dramas. Like, I can see myself as, like, a dramatic girl, like, just going through,
that.
Like, very, like, minute, like, very trivial issues that make it really, really big. Because I'm literally like that. like, sometimes it's just been like, oh my God, I got this text message. And the text message is just like, hey, girl.
Hey.
You know? And I'm making like a word.
It depends who sent that hey, girl, you know?
Oh, that's true.
You know that it's a boom or whatever. Like,
it's all about context.
Yep. So, if I could have a superpower, it would be blank.
Flying. I would want to fly.
Really?
Yeah.
I like that one because I'd be trying to get places.
Yes. Yes. First of all, the MTA.
No, no, we're not kidding. Like, that shit is trash.
Honestly,
oh my God.
It is.
Maybe New York to like solve that.
Right. Can you?
Can you? Maybe. Yo, I mean, they need some.
That alumni class, dig. If you get interested in like working in
transportation,
no, seriously, yes. Though, I feel like yes. MTA hasn't upgraded themselves in like decades
since I was born.
Right.
Like, as long as I've been alive.
Right.
Yes. No, for sure. I would want to fly because I like to travel and I just don't want to pay for flights anymore. I kind of just want to be like,
where will you bring your stuff at? Imagine you could fly with your thing. Like,
like Mary Poppins? Yes. Does she have a little luggage?
Yeah, she does have like a little
one. That case. Girl from Wizard of Oz, when she like just like clicks her feet.
Dorothy.
Yeah, Dorothy. Yes. Yeah. She just ends
I
up
love
like,
how you said that, girl. Like,
y'all are a mess. Yeah. I can't. Go ahead, you guys, for the next one.
Okay. If I could eat one thing forever, it would be blank.
Ooh. And it could be unhealthy, right?
Yeah, anything.
In this usually world, it's going to be an unhealthy
one. Right.
Okay. If I could eat anything in the world forever, it would be pastelillos. Chicken pastelillos.
Really?
Yes, because they
have
are
one today.
So good.
I have one today.
Yes,
do you make them?
Fried. I mean, no, because of the reasons why I'm trying to like live a better life.
Right.
But yeah, I felt like every day as a child, like my mom was like giving me like pastelillos every day.
It's
so
good.
It's so good.
Chicken or cheese?
Chicken.
Chicken ones.
Definitely chicken.
Okay, if I could only travel to one last place in the world, it would be blank.
It would definitely be PR.
Home, baby.
Yeah.
I feel like I knew you were going to say that.
Really? I didn't think that. But
yeah,
home is where the heart is.
I was just
and PR is so beautiful.
Yes. Yes. And specifically, like, I would want to be... like in San Juan, like in Bayel Morro. Yeah, I think for me, like, I've always said, like, you know, if I were, I haven't decided how I want to, like, die, if I want to be, like, cremated or, like, buried. But if I were to choose, like, cremation, like, I would want to
spread me across the world.
Yeah,
that's
spread me in the ER.
I want to be cremated, so I want to be spread out over.
I said in the ocean, so I had in my book. I think
that's amazing.
I consider PR.
Right, because you're half
Puerto Rican. I was born in PR.
I'm Puerto Rican. If I had to choose a subject to teach, it would be blank.
If I had to choose a subject to teach, I would probably like, and it could be any subject.
Any
right?
subject.
You could create the subject you want. You
could, right, you could word. Create the subject.
Yeah. I would probably like teach a course on how to be a boss at life.
Yes.
Oh, we need that.
I would take that class.
Yes.
Because honestly, and what I mean by that, I mean like there's so much that I feel like I've learned that no one really taught me. Like, this is what a 401k is, like how you contribute to it.
Still
this
learning
is what
my health plan.
Yes,
still.
Like this is how you evaluate health plans. Right. Like, so for me, like boss at life is just like, for me, it's like, how do you create well-rounded, like, you know, individuals who understand what they need to do so that the day that they're sitting down in their rocking chairs in old age, you know, they're rocking back and forth like, oh, okay, like, I dominated that. Like, I slayed it, you know?
Exactly.
So I feel like a lot of times, especially people, you know, from where I'm from and, you know, a lot of family members, a lot of my peers, like, you know, they haven't thought about, you know, longevity. And I feel like I've been fortunate to like, one, research a lot of these things on my own, but also have people that have been there and done that,
right,
you know, to help me figure
your
it out.
Your network is crazy.
It is.
Because from this whole interview, like your network has been really like influential
helpful
in your life.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they cover a lot of gamut.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
you have the people that help you with this, like just in the way you speak, you can
yeah
see you're well-rounded and the people you keep in your circle.
Yeah, for yeah sure. Personal board of directors.
Yes,
yes,
I like that. So it seems like Boss at Life is going to be a book. Maybe in the future?
Sure. Why not? Don't be surprised when I'm like, hey,
I'm
download my course. Download my PDF.
I'm not. If I had to choose between makeup or a fresh face, I would pick?
Fresh face. All the way.
I'm
so tired. I'm
so tired.
I'm so tired. Like,
I'm not trying to put this contour on for y'all.
Not even for myself. Like, I can't.
I used to like kill myself back in the day, you know, trying to like, I need my blush and then I have to do my eyebrows and I have to conceal them. It's just like, oh no, I don't have time. Like, I'll get pretty when it's necessary, but on a regular day, you're going to probably see me like how you saw me today.
Fresh face.
Fresh, beautiful. Face.
Yes.
If I could have dinner with one celebrity, it would be?
Dead or alive?
Dead or alive. This is your world.
We just living in it.
I think right now, probably Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh my God.
I love Ellen.
I love Ellen.
She is a freaking trip and a half.
I love her.
Me too. I think she is so great.
She is.
She is.
Yeah. So, Ellen, if you're hearing this, I'd like to have dinner.
Yes, you got to have dinner and go on the show.
Right.
Yes.
I was just gonna say, like, come have dinner here.
We just plugging in all these things. The greatness that's gonna happen.
Well, we are like about out of time.
Yes, but we are. And Jessica has to catch a flight, so she don't got no time for y'all.
She do gotta catch a flight. But before we go, Delilah introduced you to the world, and we want you to introduce yourself and what you want them to know about you.
Yes. So, hey everyone, my name is Jessica Santana. I'm one of the co-founders of New York on Tech, and I get my momentum from moving culture forward.
Oh, drops,
mic.
Yes. Well, on that note,
it was wonderful chatting with you guys, and stay tuned to the next episode.
Bye.
Peace out.
Thank you for tuning in to episode 58, Why Tech Matters with Jessica Santana. Don't forget to follow your favorite girls on the gram, Ayana, the_Aya_brand, Delilah at Miss Delilah C. Don't forget to follow non-corporate girls at non-corporate girls, and tune in next time.